Cochran. We have, do we have, who else? Oh my gosh, there's so many people here. Hey, who else, who am I missing?
I didn't hear, you said me. Curtis is here.
Curtis is here. But there's more than just three of us. There's more than just me, Matt, and Cookie. Maybe not right now.
No, I think there's three commissioners at the moment.
That's all you're... Unless Marion Johnson comes in, that's all you're going to have tonight. Josie's gone and Haley's gone.
Right. So I don't know if you guys know, but Josie has been called out about a little while ago. So hopefully everything is going well with her. It's awfully smoky out there. So anyway, we'll go ahead and open up the meeting. And we'll start by approving the July minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the July minutes?
I'll make that motion to approve the July minutes.
Okay. And I'll second it.
Okay, and then all in favor? Aye, Colleen Thompson.
Aye, Cookie Shouse.
Somebody.
Aye, Matt Bach.
Zoom.
So then
hello?
We'll go ahead and approve the agenda.
Oh, man, yeah. Hold a second. Did you get a pegboard by any chance?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Okay, let me...
I second it.
Let me...
All in favor? Aye.
Wait a minute. Hold. Can you hold a second?
Aye, Matt Cochran.
Aye, Cookie Shouse.
Okay, Peg, did you get that?
No, I'm on the phone with Mary. Sorry. I'm on the phone with Marion right now, and she needs the password, which...
Oh, I have it.
Yeah, but I need to tell it to her.
Okay.
Can you just say it, and she'll hear you?
Yeah, so do you want the first or second set of numbers?
Marion? Colleen is going to save. Go ahead.
The first set of numbers is 822-4796-7263.
Can you hold?
Yeah.
I'm kind of struggling with hands and everything else. If you got, can you just hold for just a second? Let me take care of this.
Yeah.
Michela's, I don't think, on the, there you are, Michela.
I've got the passcode if you want it.
Yeah, could you send that to Marion Salem Witch?
Yep.
Do you have her email?
Yep.
Okay, Michela's going to be sending it to you. Sorry. Okay. I'm very discombobulated right now. Let me mute myself. Okay.
So were you able to get the vote, Peg?
Well, my recorders are running, or at least one of them is, so I'm hoping it's all on there.
Muted again.
Oh.
You're muted. Okay.
I said, I think my recorder got all that. I have...
Okay. All right. Okay. And so then we'll move on to the Lee Nellis Table of Uses and Development Standards meeting. This has generally been a work meeting that we've been working with Lee Nellis for several months. We decided to just incorporate it into the meeting because we are discussing it more with everyone. So, Lee, can you go ahead and proceed, please?
I will proceed.
Thank
you.
It's
good to see such a large attendance here.
Yeah, everybody's happy to see you.
What I wanted to start with, rather than any specifics, is just to say that we've been working on this for about 5 months now. We've covered a lot of ground, a lot of topics. My sense is that the drafts that we have right now are good enough that you should consider taking them to public hearing. And we'll get back into specifics here shortly. My logic there is that you don't want to have a public hearing that covers the universe. And so while we might go ahead and work on some other topics, in terms of improving the ordinance and supporting things in the general plan, I think we've covered the big questions about home businesses and commercial uses. There's a fair amount of material associated with that, all of which is in a new format, some of which is not really new, but it's all in a new format. And so once we get through talking about the specifics here, I'd like the Planning Commission to think about saying, hey, this is good enough to take to a hearing. That doesn't mean there won't be changes or improvements. Curtis and Matt and I were corresponding this afternoon about something that I think probably needs to be tweaked in the general plan part of what we're looking at here, although it would be a small adjustment. But knowing full well that there will be changes and questions, I think now is the time to consider getting it out to the general public of the town, and then once the Planning Commission has heard from everyone, to get down to the business of finalizing it, which I don't think, depending on what you hear and where we're at, I don't think will be that difficult. I think we've covered the ground pretty well, and I sense that there is a reasonable sense of comfort with how this works. So that would be my goal for getting through the work session here, is to get you to the point of saying either we need more time on this, or let's set a hearing and see what the public has to say and then go from there. But I think it's time to set a hearing and see where we're at. Now, with that being said, Peg, if you could put up the Home Business Standards Review worksheet that I sent you early today and share that so that we can look at it as we go. This has not changed greatly in the last 2.5 months. We got through our discussion of home-based businesses at the beginning of this process, and it resulted in a list of standards for home businesses that you see in front of you now that the Peg has got this up on the screen. I'm going to zip through those super fast, just as a reminder to everyone, and then see if there are questions that people have. Home business is any business conducted in a residential structure or an accessory structure to a residence or on residential premises. It can be in any of the zoning districts because there are homes in all of the zoning districts. And that's about as complicated as the definition is. And the nature of home businesses is limited by these standards. Let me zip through them quickly just as a reminder. The occupant of the home business, the owner really of the home business, the person who's operating it, has to be in residence on those residential premises, or there's no ability to have a home business. Home businesses have to meet the dimensional requirements of the ordinance as they stand. But the Planning Commission is allowed for the outdoor portions, if you look down at section or standard 4A there, for home businesses that have outdoor storage or some outdoor activity, the Planning Commission can require deeper setbacks than are in Table 2 in the ordinance. The space devoted to a home business is limited. A little different in the commercial and general zoning districts than in the purely residential zoning districts. There are requirements there for any outdoor activities that are conducted in association with the home business. There are many communities that don't allow much in the way of outdoor activity with a home business, but in the rural setting of Boulder, that seems like it would be way too stringent. So we have the ability to have deeper setbacks, and then the ability to require some buffering or screening in the way of a fence or a wall with outdoor activities associated with the home business. The fifth standard is very important. It's about parking and traffic generation. You can consider parking. You can consider the number of deliveries. Because these cases are so unique, that standard has to be written quite broadly, but it gives the Planning Commission the ability, if need be, to turn down a proposed home business solely on the basis that it will generate too much traffic for its location. And obviously how much traffic is too much is going to vary a little bit from location to location. Parking may be required. In a lot of cases, the requirement for a home-based business is going to be zero. If there is a little parking required, the owner is encouraged to provide some buffer in your screening. The items numbered 7 there, and they go down through G, all deal with the nuisance potential of home-based businesses. And what they do basically is say home-based businesses cannot put anything in the water, they cannot put anything in the air. They can only have the hazardous material stored that would be acceptable for a residential use. Can't really ban hazardous materials. If you want someone to, say, be a furniture maker, they would have to have solvents and finishes and so on. So banning hazardous materials is not very practical, but you can keep the quantities down to very small. No additional outdoor lighting for home-based businesses. It deals with dust, smoke, glare, heat, noise. A standard that I added as we were talking about commercial uses is I realized that we hadn't talked about solid waste. And so this gives the Planning Commission the ability to discuss solid waste management for a home-based business as part of the conditional use permit. Home-based businesses are allowed a 4-square-foot sign. They are allowed to park commercial vehicles of under 10,000 gross vehicle weight. And one of the things that came out of just a couple weeks ago was a limitation on the number of vehicles. If there is a home-based mechanic or, say, auto detailing service, something like that, they would only be allowed to have 2 vehicles on the premises to be serviced in order to sort of confine the amount of steel and plastic and glass that's there in a residential neighborhood. And finally, the Planning Commission can limit the operating hours for a home-based business in order to help reduce the nuisance potential in the evenings, particularly or early in the mornings. So we've talked about other aspects or angles of home-based businesses, but this is what shook out of our discussions as best I could represent it. I think it's pretty complete and will be pretty effective for you if you choose to adopt it. And with that, I will just see if there are any questions about these home-based business standards.
See, Lee, I have one question, Mr. Matt.
Sure.
The dimensional requirements, I haven't looked at Table 2. How are they different than the space?
Dimensional requirements are the setbacks.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then the space is actually the square footage devoted to the business.
Okay, and how did you come up with the numbers for the space, out of curiosity?
Those are just pretty typical from my experience. The 750 square foot was in your ordinance.
Okay.
And is a pretty typical requirement in a lot of places in residential zones. I expanded it the C district is very small and only occupied by existing businesses anyway, so it's not very relevant. But there in your general mixed use, because that area is more agricultural, has larger parcels, I felt like you could probably tolerate a slightly larger home-based business. 1,500 square feet is still not a huge space to occupy. And certainly we can talk about those exact numbers, but what they represent is starting with where your ordinance was when I found it at the 750 square feet, and then my experience is that in the more agricultural areas, being a little more liberal usually does not cause problems. It actually usually solves the problem of people feeling a little too restricted. So
I just have one concern that we should think about the GMUs, and that is they actually vary greatly in size. For example, I'm a GMU, I'm on 10 acres. So, you know, that compared to a GMU that's 440 acres, it's something we need to think about. It's just the GMU isn't a standard size as much as the high density, middle, and low, so that I do see problems getting caused there.
Right. Well, it's worth talking about. I mean, you could expand that, or we could change it. Whether we expand it or not, we could change it to relate to the size of parcel.
Yeah, I think that might be appropriate, depending on what other commissioners think.
Right. I mean, that would not be a hard thing to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
That's it for the list. It looks good.
Other questions on this list?
Hey, it's Curtis. I have one question. I lost your deal there, but a 10,000-pound gross weight vehicle is not a very big vehicle.
That is true.
There's a lot of just one-ton ranch trucks used around town all over. So I just think that's an unrealistic weight restriction. We ought to figure out what a one-ton dually Dodge Ram weighs, and then adjust that figure. It's going to be something like 13.5, and it's the same frame and body as a three-quarter ton, sometimes even a half ton. But it weighs more, at least that's the number on the plate.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, that's a great example, Curtis, of the things that we need to have the public tell us. And if there's someone who has a home-based business that says, look, I need to be able to park a vehicle that is larger than that in association with my home-based business, then they can tell us what that vehicle weighs, and we can see if the Planning Commission is interested in making an adjustment. At this point, at least we have something to shoot at, right? Other questions here on this worksheet? If there are none, then I think we should switch over to a more complex topic, which is the commercial standards review worksheet. And then after that, we'll move into the table of uses. So if Peg, if you could, oh, you got it up. Very good. I'm going to do the same thing here. I'm going to dash through this just as quickly as I can. It's longer, but I'll dash through it, summarizing things, and then take questions. So it starts off with, you have an overlay zoning district for the Mason Tops and Hillsides. Basically says there's no commercial uses in those areas, which I think is sensible. We have some standards that we need to talk about a little bit here with water courses, but it requires a buffer between a natural stream or an irrigation works, irrigation ditch. It protects moderate slopes to some degree. I'm going to suggest that you make both of those relative standards so you have a little wiggle room in how they are applied to people. And then 1D would provide for whatever buffer you have or crossing a slope, that you can have a more or less perpendicular crossing if you need it for utilities or an access drive. 1E is a fairly broad standard. It's similar to some language that was in your ordinance when I found it, about protecting views and natural features. That's taken out of Chapter 10 in the existing ordinance. I made it a little simpler, actually. That's another one we need to talk about. It almost has to be a relative standard. Retaining vegetation. There are a lot of parcels of land in Boulder that have attractive either riparian vegetation or junipers. So we might want to talk about retaining and protecting existing vegetation there. We'll need to talk about making those relative and how important they might be. And then we start getting into some really basic stuff. Managing stormwater, that's a function of state law. You're just checking it off. Utilities. Chapter 10 of your zoning ordinance talks about water and sewer utilities. We need to just stick with that, and I didn't see any need to change that language as it is. Access to Highway 12 obviously requires a permit from UDOT. Access to other roads, we need to discuss whether there's a set of county standards that you would like to use, or you want to use UDOT standards, or what you want to do there. Utilities should be underground. I added that one in after reading the general plan and realizing that it emphasized that a lot. The dimensional standards of Table 2 are the setbacks that are in. I haven't changed those from the existing ordinance, but I have put in some discretionary language where for business use, the Planning Commission can require deeper setbacks. Your setbacks are not very deep, and generally they are probably fine, but depending on the nature of the use, I thought the Planning Commission should have a little bit of discretion there. The way that we decided, after quite a lot of discussion, to deal with the scale of commercial uses, which, in my mind, 6A, 6B, and 6C here address the most important question about commercial use in Boulder, which is what scale is it? How large can it be? And since there are some commercial uses permitted in lower-density residential, not a lot, some, It's there, and then the GMU. And we just set a maximum parking space limit, 15 spaces and 50 spaces. The thing about parking is that it has its own environmental impact in terms of runoff, potential for generating dust. It has its own visual impact. If you limit parking, and you have the requirements of Table 3 for the number of parking spaces for a business, then you're going to automatically be limiting the size of any commercial enterprise that comes in. Trying to limit commercial enterprises goes back, in other ways, goes back to a point that Matt made about all the different parcel sizes in Boulder. A lot of communities that are more dense, that are more urban, would use a floor area ratio, floor size of floor area to the lot size, or a lot coverage, the percentage of the lot that's covered. Well, if I have a large parcel, and there's some very large parcels within the town of Boulder, I could get up, even using, let's say, a 1% lot coverage limitation, I could get up to a 50,000 square foot building. Limiting it by parking spaces is simple, and I think will be the most defensible, simplest thing you can get. There's also a more general standard there, 6C, on land use intensity. We need to talk about the importance of that one. It gives you an independent way of looking at how compatible land uses are with their neighbors. There is some language there about outdoor business spaces. An awful lot of businesses that might be feasible in Boulder are going to want to have some outdoor activity or maybe even outdoor sales. All those items that are numbered 7 and 8 deal with outdoor spaces that are associated with a business, and they allow you to either absolutely or in a relative sense, we've got to talk about that one, limit their coverage on the lot, allow you to require buffering and screening, say that you can't use required parking spaces for other outdoor functions of the business. And again, outdoor sales are a little different because people want them right up on the frontage, and so there's a limit on the amount of the frontage that can be taken up with outdoor sales. These limits would be very strict in most communities. Yet at the same time, I think those of you in Boulder need to look at those pretty carefully and say, hey, are these in accord with what we want? Are they stringent enough for what we want to accomplish in Boulder? Number 9 there is parking and traffic. Again, as I said with the home businesses, this gives the Planning Commission broad powers to say, hey, a particular proposed commercial use would generate too much traffic with a particular location, the particular roads that it's on. Off-street parking is there. Obviously, your businesses, whether it be a cafe or a gift shop or anything you could imagine happening in Boulder, are going to require some parking. This puts a limit on how much allows you to put a limit on how much of the parking is on the frontage so that as people drive through Boulder, they see something besides a sea of vehicles. Allows you to require buffering and screening of parking spaces. When you get to 11, it gets back to a conversation we had recently about buildings. This allows you to encourage or require the building access, a long dimension of a building, be perpendicular to the street instead of paralleling in. That limits the visual impact of structures. If you think about Boulder Mountain Lodge, it is quite a bit deeper than it is wide. And if you change the dimensions, if you swapped it, it would have quite a bit more impact as a commercial building on the view from the street. We can move on to the next page there. Architectural relief. This is one that you might not ever use. But if you get a pretty big building, it will allow you to say you can't have just a big monolithic continuous wall. This is a very common standard in growing suburban and urban places, just to break up, because we get, you know, even in Boulder, you could get a wall that, let's say on a motel, for instance, you could have a wall that was 120 feet long. You don't want that to just be a long stretch of sight. You want there to be relief of doors, windows, maybe a variation in the texture, maybe a variation in color. There are a lot of different ways to comply with that. The items number 12, all deal with nuisances. They are almost identical to those with home businesses. And again, businesses that put things in the air or the water are not permitted. Hazardous materials are limited. Outdoor lighting has to be fixtures that meet standards of the International Dark Sky Association. Light trespass is limited. That's an existing thing from chapter 10. Dust, smoke, heat, glare, noise. There is a noxious weeds requirement in chapter 10 that's a function of state law. Solid waste management then at 13 is important. Signs, you have chapter 10. I have not proposed any changes. Do not intend to propose any changes in what you say about signs right now. If there is some discontent or questions about the sign regulations, that's going to be a separate and somewhat detailed process that has to be gone through. Signs are one of the most difficult of all regulatory topics. There is the ability, again, to limit operating hours. There is a ban on drive-in and drive-through facilities that comes out of the existing ordinance. I've reworded it a bit, but that's not actually new. We've got to talk about 17 at some point, maybe after a hearing rather than before. There is language in the ordinance now about standardized commercial uses where people would have standard uniforms, standard menus. It's all aimed at franchise-type businesses that are thought not to really be very compatible with Boulder. The reason we need to talk about it is not because you shouldn't do that, okay? The reason we need to talk about it is because it does require, compared to any of these other standards, that's going to be subject to the most scrutiny if you try to run this through court. There are places, what you've got is modeled on what, as far as I know, was first adopted in Calistoga, California, out in the wine country, about the standard menus, uniforms, things like that. That's what Calistoga did many years ago. That was upheld in California. Would this be upheld in Utah? It's never been tried. Nobody knows. And so the discussion we need to have of it is there's a little bit more risk in regulating this way than in any of the other ways you've got listed here. If the people of Boulder want to take that risk, that's okay, but I just want you to be informed. And finally, this ends. I realized that it is part of the existing ordinance that there can be living quarters for the owner or employees associated with a business. So I put that in there to say, hey, yeah, there. And then I took the opportunity to add 18B, which would actually be a way to encourage the provision of employee housing. We'd have to decide on a weight and a point range for that. But there's certainly, from my perspective, at least as I think about what Boulder has and what Boulder needs, encouraging someone to build an apartment into a commercial building or to, you know, to provide some affordable housing is something that I think might be worth doing. I don't think you would ever require that per se, but you can certainly encourage it and put it into the trade-offs that you consider when you consider a commercial use. We just had have a new hotel here where I live that's about to open, and it is very, very difficult to find a place to rent, no matter how much you're willing to pay. And I'm just wondering, most of those employees are going to have to travel close to 40 miles to come work at a hotel. Going to be tough. So that's what we've covered. We've had more discussion of some of this than other parts as we went through, but I think that I've captured that discussion and all the pieces that seemed important out of the different parts of the existing ordinance. And I will end by saying that there's one thing that we haven't got here. I don't know whether you want to dive into it right now or not. We can talk about that. We don't have anything in here about commercial building design. We have something about architecture relief, which aims kind of towards that, but really doesn't say anything specific about design per se. You know, we have the things about limiting frontage and the access of the building, but as far as materials, colors, any of that stuff, other than 11B. This doesn't touch it. There is some extremely broad and, in my opinion, reckless language in your existing ordinance that says, and I found another instance of that the last time we talked. In Chapter 10, it says that buildings are not supposed to create jarring disharmonies. I really don't want to write a definition of what a jarring disharmony might be. There is also, it turns out, in Chapter 8, under the conditional use standards, hiding in there the ability of the Planning Commission to affect building design with absolutely no guidelines at all, which is also probably unwise. And I'm thinking, if you want to add a conversation about building design to these standards, I think that would require us to have one more work session. My sense is that maybe that's a separate topic. Let's get these fundamental things dealt with. Hopefully there's not going to be a great deal of controversy about them. And then we could get into a more controversial topic in terms of the building design and just focus on that for a couple of meetings if we needed to. But we can add it now if that's what the Planning Commission prefers to do. If you say don't add it now, then I will add to the amendments that I sent you, taking that building design language out of the ordinance. It's language that you really don't want to be responsible for trying to deal with. It would be better to take it out now than put back in something that's easier to work with. So that's where we're at. I think this covers the major aspects of how commercial uses would impact the town. I think it gives you a fair amount of power to have the type of commercial that you want. And I will take questions.
Okay. I have some questions. A general one for clarification first, if you will. So, as I understand it, the commercial standards review can be applied to any zone or just GMU, commercial, and low density.
The way it works, really, we've got a cat, I've got to move out of the way here, is that it applies anywhere that the table of uses allows commercial use. So there are a handful of commercial uses that might happen in a low-density residential district, right? And then there are, because we're not going to do more spot zoning with the C-zone, then we're going to put these things by conditional use into the GMU. So mainly you're going to end up using it in the GMU. Now you can change that. You can say, hey, there's a commercial use that we would allow in the other residential districts. The use table, the way it's drafted right now, didn't do that.
Okay.
Could. You could take uses out. So when we get to the use table, you know, that's really critical to your question.
Okay. Can the high density and middle density can someone go through commercial development standards in those zones of this list?
No, not unless we change the use table.
Okay. My concern around the low density and the GMU is, again, you know, that the compatibility of these standards hold up and actually protect those areas because they are residential areas, and that is. And I want to make sure the proof of the pudding's there, that stuff works out, right?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay.
And I just would say that, you know, the way Boulder has done business in the past is that you would rezone a parcel to commercial, and there are very few guidelines, very few specific guidelines for doing that.
Right.
And then you would issue a conditional use permit within that zoning district, right? That's the way things always work.
Okay.
The problem with that, well, there's more than one problem, but the first and most obvious problem is, let's say that I come in and I say, hey, I'm going to build a use that you like, whatever that use is, and so you rezone to commercial. And then I say, oh, gee, I ran out of money. Then you're stuck with an area that's zoned commercial. and you don't know what the use will be anymore. And that's a problem. That's spot zoning. It's not a good practice. And the reason it's not, there are multiple reasons it's not a good practice, including some technical legal ones, but the biggest reason it's not a good practice is it just means that you're suddenly under pressure, you as a town are under pressure to permit some sort of commercial use there, when it's not the use that you anticipated, it isn't the use that caused you to rezone in the first place.
Gotcha, yeah.
Right, and so my sense is that we save time and process, get the same results by just having a good set of standards and not worrying about the name of the zone. That's where we're at.
Yeah, I think I just wanted clarification that,
right.
You know, it looks different than it was, and so that's what I'm bringing on. As far as the list goes, a few comments on some of those terms.
Sure.
I actually think watercourse buffers and irrigation ditches should be an absolute. Irrigation ditches, in my mind, although it sounds like, you know, some water and cement running through, here are actually ephemeral streams for a lot of wildlife. Any of us who goes out and looks at them, you know, sees them, I think, as small creeks. Mm-hmm. So they're worthwhile being protected to me. And I think
that's up here in item 1B.
Yeah.
As Peg is scrolling along here, we're talking about item 1B.
Correct.
And, you know, I've just left that blank for this discussion that you've started. And certainly, if everyone agrees, it's easy to put a check mark under absolute there and move on.
I agree with the check mark.
Okay. Unless I hear disagreement, that's the way we'll take it to hearing.
Thank you.
Moderate slopes, in my mind, is a much different question.
Yeah.
Because of the topography, a boulder, it is certainly possible there are going to be parcels of land where a driveway or a utility crosses a moderate slope where it makes more sense to be on a bit of a slope than on irrigated land, for example. I think there's a lot of reasons to be flexible about slopes, and I would rather see that one be a relative standard, perhaps with a fairly high weight. From my own point of view, just because my experience and looking at the terrain of Boulder is that, yeah, if you make that absolute, you're going to bump into it pretty hard at some point.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I like everything there. There's an issue, probably can't do anything about it since it's state law, but I'm going to put it out there anyways. The noxious weed thing is an interesting problem in Boulder because what happens is you get things like, if noxious weeds are out there, you get something like Roundup on there, then people who may be adjacent to those properties and are growing organic gardens, there's a concern.
Right. I don't know
how towns have dealt with that, but it's just a real issue here.
The problem is, and Curtis could chime in here, I think you're pretty much preempted by state law when dealing with weeds.
Yeah.
I understand precisely what you're saying, and I would rather not have glyphosate anywhere near my garden either, or some other things. But I'm pretty confident that we'd end up bumping into state law ruling here rather than whatever the town.
That's what I figured. Let's see. The last thing I had on there was... I would actually like to consider discussing commercial design.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Let's come back to that after we're done with the less complicated parts of this, okay? If anybody has any other questions on what's on the list, I'd like to come back to that, and I'd also like to come back to standardized commercial for just 1 second, at least.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
I'm good.
Okay. So, I've told you my story about standardized commercial, which is I think you ought to do it. You just need to be aware of the risk that is involved. Fortunately, Boulder is not large enough. Doesn't have enough traffic to attract a whole lot of interest in the idea of franchises anyway. I actually looked up the annual daily traffic on Utah 12. You know, and spread out over the year, it's not very high. It's not gonna meet the cut for most franchises. Almost all of them have some sort of a cutoff on how much traffic goes by. So I think you are protected for the time being by your isolation. And I think we can put that in there. You just need to be aware. But if anybody's queasy about it or has reservations, now would be the time to speak. So commercial design, I've said this before, but let me try to say it again briefly. There are, and I have been cautioned, that the design could be a sensitive topic in Boulder, and I understand that, as it is in so many places. The best way to deal with this is to have a somewhat organized process, and the way that I have done it in the past that really worked out was to simply say to the Planning Commission and to the public, to everyone who would like to be involved, bring me a picture. Either bring me a picture of something you think is really good, or bring me a picture of something you think is horrible. You guys can drive down to Richfield or St. George or wherever and get all sorts of pictures of the horrible or whatever. I guess you don't have to even go that far. And then to just, you know, since we're doing this virtually, it's probably easy. You get those pictures laid out and you say, well, what do they have in common? And my suspicion is that you will find that they have a few things in common about color and material. They may not have anything in common about shape or particular architectural features. And if they don't, that's fine. If we're going to deal with design, we need to keep it simple. But we need you to have some guidelines. And saying that something's a jarring disharmony is not a guideline. It's an indictment. And the language that I found, I hadn't even seen this, even though I'd been through the ordinance a couple of times, but I finally focused on it in Chapter 8 because I was rewriting parts of Chapter 8 to make this all work. It basically says that Planning Commission can condition a conditional use permit, the approval of a conditional use permit on design, with no guidelines at all. And that's dangerous. So my sense is that if we went through that process, which we could do fairly quickly, we would come up with some fundamental, we like this, we don't like that, guidance that the Planning Commission could then say, hey, we're looking at this building and it's not right. We don't have to call it a jarring disharmony. We can say, look, you know, you've got a material on here that glares or is going to glare. That's not consistent with what we want here. We want things to blend into the landscape. You've got colors that are not compatible. Some of you have probably been to Red Lodge, Montana, and when I was working there, this would have been in the mid-90s, some time ago now, people were saying to me, we don't need design guidelines. We don't have to do that, right? We have all these nice old buildings. Everything will be fine. Don't worry about it. And then, before we got done doing the plan that I was writing for them, someone painted one of the downtown buildings Pepto-Bismol. And all of a sudden, we needed a design guideline, right? There was a complete 180-degree turn in public opinion as a result of that. And that building, I am happy to say, has since been repainted. And it is not a great building, but it's way better than it was. You've got a cat's tail there. Yeah, you got it.
So, Lee?
I think you can do this if you want to.
Hello. So Lee, I just want to, so you have mentioned, I think this is the third meeting now, on these design standards, and you wanted us to go out, you've mentioned this several times, mm-hmm. and it's pretty obvious that none of us have really come up with anything, and you mentioned that you would be open to having another meeting where we could talk about design standards, and I'm wondering if it's because we don't have any idea of where to go with that. Like Matt and Cookie, can you maybe chime in on that? Because I feel like, I mean, I do think that we need to take some pictures. That would be good. But would you both be interested in doing that, having a meeting with Lee, like we have been, as far as coming up with these design standards or giving us some examples of how to do that?
I suggest we pursue it and, you know, make it actually homework. It hasn't been on my radar so far because we haven't really decided on it, it seems like.
Okay.
But, you know, I think at this point, yeah, a meeting of its own post-public hearing doesn't really matter, you know,
yeah.
but we should plan for it.
Yeah, I do too. Cookie, how do you feel about that?
I am in agreement. I have taken photographs of different picky things, but also some things that I think would fit in Boulder. But I haven't sent them to anybody. I didn't know exactly who to send them to. I could do that at the end of the meeting, or I would rather wait and just have a meeting about design, and then I'll bring them along.
Yeah, let's schedule that meeting when we do business for next month, and then we'll schedule that meeting, and we'll have a timeline of when to take pictures and get them in and how to do all that.
Yeah, deadline always helps.
Yeah.
Colleen, is Marion Johnson on the phone? She gets to weigh in on this too.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if I was going to ask about if Marion had a comment too. Are you there, Marion?
I was thinking she was one of the phone numbers that I don't know who they are, but
it shows that all the phone numbers are muted. I don't know if there's...
Yeah. Devaki says if I hit unmute, it sends them a message to unmute their phone.
Well, we can ask, but if they're not on a smartphone...
Yeah. So, Marion, if you can hear this... Either chat or... Oh, you can't chat if you're on the phone, can you? Well, okay. Anyway, proceed. I thought Marion would be here.
Okay. If at any time, you know, in the next little bit, if she can chime in, I would be happy to hear that. Another thing that I wanted to comment on, Lee, is you were talking about... can commercial uses include accessory dwellings? And we haven't talked about that either, as far as the commercial development encouraging housing for commercial development and how we would go about that. So, because we're talking about housing for people, all like you were talking with somebody that just opened a hotel and there's no housing for anybody. And so we haven't talked at all about having affordable housing or some kind of housing in commercial development. Is anyone interested in talking about that? And could you help us with that, Lee?
I could. There's some steps. Okay, this can get complicated, right? All that I've proposed here is what I think is the simplest possible two steps. The first of which is that your ordinance, the use table, already allows accessory dwellings with businesses.
Yeah.
So that's a decision that's been made. There aren't any guidelines. There isn't anything specific there.
No.
But it's a good idea. After all, if I were to build a little gift shop in Boulder and wanted to live in an apartment above it, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see how that would be incompatible. The second step that I put here is an attempt to identify priority in a really super simple way, which is to say that we would encourage businesses to provide employee housing, and they could then trade that off against building on a moderate slope or some of the other environmental concerns that we have, that would help them get to a positive score on the relative standards. It doesn't tell them they have to do it. It's a provision that might never be used, okay, from a practical point of view. But what it is, what I think is important about it, is that it's a statement by the town that we're thinking about this issue. Now, the next steps of thinking about that issue, I mean, you're going to talk some about a housing development tonight when you get into the rezoning. You know, there's a bunch of other steps in dealing with that issue that the town could take. I haven't seen that as my task. My task has just been, let's work on the ordinance here.
Yeah.
And to the extent that we need to work on the plan to support the ordinance, we'll do that. But I think that, and we've just about used our hour together here, but I really think that just having it here as a thought that no one has to use and that may never be used is at least a signal to the public that you're aware of the issue, that you would encourage someone to do it. You know, I think about uses that are likely in Boulder. Suppose that somebody on one of the larger parcels wanted to put in an RV park. RV parks almost always include some employee housing, right?
Yeah.
And we certainly don't want to prohibit that, right? Right. That's the first step, is you don't prohibit them from doing that. The second step is that you have to explicitly allow it, and then you might say, well, we'll encourage that in some way that helps them in their plan. So I think what is here is doing enough without doing too much.
Okay.
And we can, you guys can take it on. I mean, you're going to have some discussion of, you know, a rezoning that is aimed at trying to provide more affordable housing here later in the meeting. It's an issue that you're going to have to grapple with, and you're going to have to do a lot more than this to be successful. This is just within the framework of what I was doing, what I could do simply, straightforwardly.
Okay. Yeah.
And I guess what I would say, since I know you guys have a lot of other stuff on your agenda, is look at the use table and think about that, because we don't really have time to discuss it. Figure out when you want to schedule a meeting that would be a work session on design, and we'd also look at the use table at that time, which I think is fairly straightforward and easy. Once you tell me the date of the meeting that you want to talk about design, I'll send you instructions for what to do with the photos, and we'll just get it done.
And then, Matt, did you say, and Cookie, Marion, do we want to have a work meeting before our regular meeting in a month from now?
Well, a couple of things. I'm up for that. My other suggestion, answering Lee's introduction, is that I personally don't think we should have a public hearing next time, mainly considering that two of our primary commissioner members aren't here tonight. There is a lot to digest in this. I actually have a lot of details, which I can go with over. I can send to you via email, Lee, but I think it warrants more discussion, just so we're all very familiar with what's going on. So when a public hearing happens, we can actually address and hear what's going on. That's my suggestion, or my vote there.
So then, can we put that on the agenda for next month? We would have the design meeting, pardon me, at 6 o'clock, and then, except we can't run, okay, yeah.
No, I would suggest we have a design meeting
if
he's available before.
Yeah.
Have a regular meeting discussing what we didn't finish here today with Lee before at 6 o'clock before the next BC meeting in September.
Okay.
They have a public hearing.
And then talk about having a public meeting after next month, like
correct.
Maybe in October.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I my schedule is evolving a little bit, and some parts of it are not actually as clear as I would like as the school year starts, both for me and my kids. But if you guys want to schedule a work session for a Tuesday evening or a Thursday evening on the design in a couple of weeks, do that and let me know, and I will send out a memo of instructions for what I think we should do with the photos and how we can talk about them. I'll be a little outline of subjects that we can pick out from the photos and talk about. Won't be very complicated, but it'll be a method of working through it. So, you know, when you get around to setting up your future schedule here, just tell me as soon as possible. I've got some other things I've got to discuss with Curtis here soon anyway. So he can convey to me, or Peg can, whatever you've decided about a date, and I'll get to work.
Okay.
But I think that, yeah, probably you guys ought to move on to your next topics. We've done what we need to do here, okay?
Hey, all right, thank you, Lee.
I have one request, Lee, before you go.
Yes.
Could you give me, you know a lot more about cell towers than I do. Mm-hmm. Could you give me a two or three, could you give us, everyone listening, including the public, a 2 or 3 minute dissertation? You've read the ordinance I presented. We've talked
about it. I guess the first thing I'll say is I think the ordinance is okay. It gives you the ability to at least discuss these topics, like co-location and height and so on, with an applicant. You have to be careful in regulating cell towers because your power you have some power, but it's not not complete. There is some federal preemption for telecommunications. I think that a lot of communities that have, you know, more resources have just gone to the point where they've identified locations where towers are accepted. I don't think you can do that. But my real advice is to make sure, if you get an actual application, that you clearly understand what they're trying to accomplish and the limitations. You know, the last community that I worked in on this stuff isn't very helpful because the only cell towers are either hidden in church steeples or in silos on farms.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's pretty cool, but it's kind of unique too, right? You guys can't pull that off. You don't have, I don't know if there's a single silo in Boulder, and there's probably one church steeple, so that's not an option, but you need to think. You know, you need to use the power of that ordinance that Curtis is coming up with, gives you, to have a conversation with people to minimize the impact. And, you know, the other thing is on uses like this, don't be afraid to stick to your guns. Yeah, they might have some federal preemption. They might want to, you know, litigate, but for the most part, what they want to do is provide service and make money. And if you can come to a compromise where that's possible for them, they'll be okay with it. So, you know, it's a somewhat touchy topic. It's a difficult topic because there are certain technical requirements that they have to meet. And make sure that the ground facility looks good. I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, you'll see a lot of cell towers that are surrounded by barbed wire at the bottom and stuff like that. And they really, they have to do what you want about the ground facility. They don't have any preemption about that. So if you say that they need to plant trees around it, put a screening wall around it, whatever you want for the ground facility, just do it. Okay?
Thank you.
Alrighty, you guys have a good meeting, and let me know when you want to have this conversation about building design, and we'll do it.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Lee.
Okay, so we're going to move on to new business, and
I do want to make a comment. We have initial public comments starting at new business. We also always have public comments at the end of our meeting. I would like to try and hold initial public comments not so that we don't go into the Hoyt conceptual plan, because Tom hasn't given us he hasn't been able to tell us about the concept yet. So if you will hold your public comments to the end of the meeting, then that's when we can talk about the conceptual plan. And we will give everybody a chance to speak then. So as new business, I am going to open it up for initial public comments right now. And and we're also we would ask that you take 3 minutes so that we have a lot of people. We have 45 people on right now. I'm not sure who's going to speak, but we have go ahead with the initial public comment.
Does everybody know how to raise their hand?
You don't. Thank you, Michaela. Thank you.
Just visually, I'm kind of scanning through. Trying to give everybody a few seconds here. Nobody's raising their hand. Their hand visually or virtually. So, oh, we've got one. Okay, Randy Catmull, go ahead. If you're muted, you'll need to unmute yourself. Let's see. Go ahead, Randy.
Him?
He's got it raised virtually. I've got it in the participant screen.
Okay, but can you see him?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, is he trying to talk to us?
No, and it just walked away from the screen.
Oh, okay.
Maybe he's going to call in.
Hello,
okay.
Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, Randy, will you lower your volume on the computer so there's not that that feedback?
Okay. Yes, my question, Art, for an application as we're looking at here, is this a land use application?
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
I said the application here, he's submitting here, this is a land use application.
Are you talking,
I'm talking to you, Colleen.
I know, I know you're talking to me, Randy. What I would like to know is what application?
The Tom Hoyt application.
Okay.
Okay, this is a land use application.
Okay.
On here. And so in a land use application, are we considering the clustered housing in this application, or do we just add a separate application that he needs to do? This is just for zone change from high density or green belt to high density. To me, that's two different applications. This is only one. And one application should be finished up before you start the other application. So the clustered housing shouldn't even be consideration until the land use has been changed to rezone. The way my understanding on this is. Can you correct me if that's right or not?
No, I think you're correct on that. We do have two things that we're discussing: the subdivision and the land and the zoning. And so, as I said, he will present his information in a few minutes. And so, we can go, we'll know more information once he presents both of those ideas tonight.
This was what was taken off of your website here that I'm looking at, that you put there.
Okay, well, like I said, we haven't talked about Tom Hoyt at all right now, and so I don't know that I can answer your questions. We're going to open up public comment for the final, the end of it, after he's talked.
I understand what you're saying, Colleen. I was looking to see if this was an application. It was just for the rezone and not the conceptual plan.
It's for both.
But there's no application for a conceptual plan.
No, there's two applications, Randy.
Thank you, Curtis.
Where is the other application for it?
They're both on the website.
All right. I may have overlooked it, but Sarah, okay.
Okay.
And then the other question is, go ahead. I'll let you go ahead and do your things, and after I'll ask a couple more comments. That's fine.
Okay, because we are going to open it up. I don't know how much Tom will be able to answer your questions as he gives his spiel. Sorry, and then we will open it for public comment for you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll turn the phone back on. Yes.
So, Ms. Shayla, do we have any more hands up?
I'm looking.
Okay, thank you. Just let me know when you're ready, okay?
And just for your information, Elizabeth just sent a chat link to everyone, and it shows the concept plan application, and it's also, there's another link for the rezone application. So, Randy, that makes it easier for you to identify versus going back to the website. You can just click on that link. No visual. If you've forgotten that you need to start your video so you can raise your hand if you don't know how to do it virtually, now would be a good time. I don't have any virtual hand raises, and I don't have any visuals. We'll give it a second here. It takes a minute.
Okay.
We had a fair crowd tonight, ladies and gentlemen. 46 of us.
That's the record.
It's a big one, maybe. Okay. Well, if you're having trouble, you can chat with either myself or Peg or Colleen. Let us know that you've got something to say right now.
I see there's six of them, but I don't know how to do the chat thing. Do I just push the chat?
Yeah, if you hover over the bottom of your screen,
your computer screen,
in the middle, there's a chat. This is for everybody, actually. And you can send it to everyone, so we all see it, or you can send it to one of us personally. I don't see anything. Maybe we move on, and then people at this point, you can.
Yeah, we'll have the public.
Let us know at the end of the meeting in the public comments.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. So, do I hear a motion to close the regular meeting and open the public hearing?
Matt, I'll make a motion to close the regular meeting and open up the public hearing for the cell tower ordinance.
Thank you.
This is Cookie, and I'll second that.
Okay, and then I.
Aye.
And do we have Marion?
No.
I thought I heard Marion.
Maybe for the record, maybe we state that Marion's going to submit her votes by email. If she's having trouble unmuting herself, she can send an email to the commission. And Peg, would that qualify? I don't know. Is that online?
Yeah, I think as long as we know that she was here and participated, that's fine with me.
I think
she wants to?
I think she's on. I've got a couple of numbers, and I want to say hers is the 801. I can double check. I have the phone number, but anyway.
So can we move on, or should we wait a minute?
Why don't we move on, and then okay. We'll come back after Michelle if we need to deal with Marion's vote.
I'll try and text her.
So I think as we open up the public hearing, I don't know. I think everyone that's on can see the wireless communication tower and facility ordinance on your screen, and you might have already seen it, you know, before. I don't know. But this is what we'll be looking at today. If anyone has any comments about the wireless communication towers and facilities zoning ordinance proposed changes.
Lee?
Yes.
May I introduce him?
Yeah.
Okay. I messed up, and I don't dare screen share. Anyway, so can you do the scrolling for me, the screen sharing?
Yeah, just tell me where you want to go.
Okay. Well, the whereases, just go back to the whereases very quickly. The whereases, the Planning Commission members have all seen it. The members of the public, so this is more for the members of the public. And so the whereas is just explain the rationale, how it ties to the general plan, etc. Okay, go down to the next page. Let me just say generally the reason for this is because at the moment, go back just a dot. A little more, there you go, right there. So right now, all we have is Chapter 10, Section 1008, Exception to Height Limitations. And what it says is... that right now, flagpoles, steeples, chimneys, water tanks, and wireless or television masts, silos, barns, etc., are exempt from the 30-foot height limitations for structure found in the table of uses.
Okay, so really quick, can you enlarge that so we can all see it a little bit better? It's very small. Sorry.
Hold on.
Sorry, Curtis.
Thanks. Wow. I can see. Oh. Oh, now it's too big for me. Wow.
Yeah, it's huge. That should be good, yeah. How's that?
Okay.
Anyway, Peg's in control of it. So, basically, go down a little, Peg. So, what the strikeout does in Section 1008 is, go back up a little bit. It strikes out wireless or television masts, and then it amends Chapter 10 by adding Section 1021. Now, the reason for this is if somebody came to Boulder tomorrow, a wireless company, and they wanted to build a 200-foot tower next to the elementary school there, we really don't have anything in our ordinance that could give us any way to mitigate that or to... prevent it. As Lee said, the FCC doesn't allow you to prohibit it, but it does allow you to mitigate and look for reasonable alternatives and so forth. And so right now we do have a conditional use permit on that because it's a structure, but our conditional use ordinance is basically silent on it. So we're pretty defenseless if somebody wanted to replace that existing tower with a tower of any height in the middle of town next to across from the church and across from the school. So this ordinance, with Lee's guidance, was found online at a website called Scenic America. And what they've done is, quit jumping around, please. What they've done, just go back up to where you were. Let's go sequentially. What they have done is they've set it so that the conditional use permit is required, and then it goes, okay, now you can scroll. And what it does is it gives you the ability to start to guide, have a conversation with them about where they can do it. Now, Boulder is unique Well, Lee said his place is unique because they have church steeples and they have cycles. But what we have is mesas. And so we also have a unique feature here where towers are more suitable. And you can build a 10-foot tower up on the top of one of the mesas, and you're already 400 feet in the air. And so it's mission accomplished for these guys with little or no impact. So these are things that I, with this ordinance, I'm trying to give the Planning Commission and the town council the ability to have that conversation and then guide them and direct them so that they get the maximum benefit for them and the maximum benefit for the town in terms of cell service, etc., with reasonable or minimal impacts. So then you go to the location of the facilities, and it talks about, I'm not going to get too bogged down in it, but it, okay, you can scroll down. So we can see all of two, there you go. So the location of the facilities can be approved near the center of town or on mesa tops or in scenic corridors only if they can be concealed so as to be substantially invisible. Now you all know that they have techniques now to make them shaped like trees, like boulders. They can do just about anything, and the technology has advanced so much. So this gives the town the ability to have that conversation and begin to require that. The height restriction, this is arbitrary. The Planning Commission needs to kind of talk about it and see whether they agree or disagree. In the Scenic America one, they had 100 feet plus a 20% negotiation buffer. But their tree line, they explained there that their trees are 100 feet tall, and so they could go 20 feet above the trees. So our trees are 100 feet tall. So I just said 50 feet because our tree line varies between 30 and 35 feet. And so that gives them up of the tree line, but, you know, not to exceed 50 feet. But like I say, there's so many other options in town on sides of mesas, on tops of mesas, etc., that they should be able to find plenty of alternatives. Okay, that's, these are some, as you can tell, I'm a little new to this myself. Well, these are the telecommunication facilities at the bottom of the building. So you, a lot of times, like in South Central, you'll see a structure there, and the structure will heighten, will facilitate the controls for the tower. And so you can use a percentage here on the structure. You can read that, see if it works. Okay, go down a little more. Co-location. Basically, what co-location means is that they have to allow other providers to use their tower. So if you allow a tower, they have to prove that to the town that they have contacted other providers, that other providers can use that tower, and so they can gang up on one tower instead of having three or four towers by each different group. And this gives some ratios. 50% of co-location exceeds the cost of the new facility. I just took this out of their ordinance. They've worked it over pretty carefully over many years. And so what it does is it puts a lot of pressure on them to cooperate with each other and share towers. Now you can keep going past co-location. It just gives the town a lot more power to encourage that and require it. This talks about a tall tower and setbacks from buildings and from property lines and from public right-of-ways and public buildings. So like right now, for example, had they come into town and wanted to put a 120-foot tower, which was the phone call I originally got that prompted this, right behind the South Central building, that could potentially, if it came down, that could potentially reach the schoolyard, it could reach the elementary school. So this addresses some of those issues, and it has to be, you take the height of the tower and it has to be 2.5 times away from the property line. And so this encourages them to get further out on a bigger piece. I talked to South Central, I talked to Shane up there, they said, Yeah, they might have a conversation about allowing them up there. I know that this same company is now in conversation with the Petersons, and Anselm called me the other day. They called him about adding this existing tower they have in South Central, about relocating it up on Thompson's Ledge if they can get permission from the Peterson to add it to the two or three other towers that are already up there. Okay, you can keep going down. This is the area down below that Lee was talking about, where you're surrounded by a fence, you put a sign in, and there's provisions in here saying you have to make it look decent. You can't just do the barbed wire thing he was talking about. Your sign, which is compatible with our sign ordinance, 4 square feet max, no higher than 5 feet off the ground. You can't create, the lighting has to be correct, has to be downcast. It can't be, you know, has to be, you know, full cutoff, etc. Light the area, not the surrounding area, big spotlights. The electronic emissions and electromagnetic radiation, this refers back to the ongoing discussion that the FCC is having and the studies that are going on, and they have to abide by all those. And this is a very highly evolving area as we get more and more electronic emissions and electromagnetic radiation in our world. There's more and more concern about it, and the FCC is evolving this. And so what this says, basically, is that they have to understand and comply with those, and we have to educate ourselves, and then they have to abide by all of those laws and bring their facilities into compliance within 120 days of any new regulations. Right now, we don't have the ability to regulate that. The FCC does that. But that's an ever-evolving situation. Okay, number 9. And this just says if they abandon that tower, they've got to remove it, and they have to provide either a cash bond or they have to provide an irrevocable letter of credit, so that if they go out of business, which that can happen, and that tower is just sitting there and nobody's in charge of it anymore, that you've got some way to take it down and defray the cost of doing that. Okay, so that's really kind of it in a nutshell. And like I said, I'm not an expert on this, but I think the people at Scenic America did hire a lot of experts. It's pretty thoughtful. Lee looked it over carefully and said that he thought it was pretty good. I do feel some sense of urgency about passing this along to the town council and getting through the public hearing stage, because, you know, if they come along and they submit an application, then where are we? Like I say, I feel like we're kind of defenseless. Then we get into this argument of, well, does their application vest on what we have right now, which is not much, or does it vest on what we're doing, stall them? But nobody wants a lawsuit over that. So I would just like to see us get something through, and then if you want to refine it later, or if between now and when it goes to the town council for public hearing, if there's things that need to be changed, or if you read it, if you haven't had a chance to really express your concerns about it, or it needs massaging, then there's plenty of time to do that. But I would like to, you know, I feel a sense of urgency about it, getting this through before an application comes through to me as the zoning administrator, and I've got to start processing. So anyway, if you want to open up to the public, Colleen.
Yeah, thank you, Curtis. Michela, do we have any public comments?
I'm looking.
Debbie had raised her hand earlier. What?
I'm not sure. I heard something. Maybe try again, whoever that was.
Is that Debbie Stout?
It is.
Sorry, I don't know. Barely. Could you say it one more time so I can catch that?
Can
I can hear your voice. Are you close enough to your microphone? Yes, better.
Okay. I just raised my hand because I couldn't
see the whole
document. Oh,
okay. By the way, this entire document is also on the website under meeting materials. If you go to the planning website that Elizabeth had out earlier, scroll all the way down to the bottom beyond the agenda. And all the meeting materials, every document, Lee Nellis's documents, this document, all the Hoyt documentation is all down there, uploaded to the web. So you can read it at your leisure between now and whenever.
Okay, Ashley has something to say. Go ahead, Ashley. Remember to unmute yourself, please.
Okay, this is Ashley. I think that we need to have a bigger tower and it being up on some sort of a ledge, you know, high enough to where there's more coverage than there is right now, because there's people like down in the draw or out in salt belts that don't have any coverage. So I think we need to have a tower high enough and in a certain location where everybody all over could receive coverage.
Thank you, Ashley. Curtis, does anyone have any does anyone else have any more comments in the public?
I do.
Okay.
I didn't read the ordinance carefully enough to answer my own question, but I would like some language in it that requires that any tower that is set up does in fact benefit people in the Boulder area, the greater Boulder area, town and out here, well, wherever. Simply because I think there are some high towers that are more for their own company connection purposes, and they're not specifically designed to improve communication in Boulder itself. I'd like to see that be some sort of a mitigating condition.
That's a great point.
I don't have any other virtual hands raised. If you want to say something, take your put your camera on so we can see you visually if you don't know how to do it on Zoom.
Just go.
Hey, Michelle, just let me know when we're ready to move on.
I don't have anybody else.
Okay. So can I have a motion to close the public hearing and open our regular meeting?
Matt, I'll make a motion to close the public hearing and reopen the regular meeting.
I'll second it.
All in favor, Matt? Aye.
Aye. Colleen? Cookie, are you there?
Yes, I think I am.
Okay, there you are.
Okay.
Did you vote?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so then we're back to our regular meeting. Do any of the commissioners have any other comments to add to what we just heard, Matt?
I like Peg's recommendation. I wonder, Curtis, if we can get that in there. And then beyond that, I am happy with all the language that's in there. I think it's, hopefully it'll serve us better than what we have now.
I would suggest then that what I do is if you want to take a vote on it, if it gets approved, make it condition upon my adding Peg's concern in there that we can use a net benefit to the community as one of the trade-offs in approving this.
Okay.
And I'll send you that language before it goes to the town council, so you can massage it around. So when it goes to the town council, all of the planning commission members have had a chance to weigh in on that language, and it'll be what you want sent up, if you want to do it that way.
Thank you.
Have we heard anything from Marion?
I've texted her. That wasn't her 801 number. Hopefully she is listening and she will email. I've been periodically checking and I haven't seen anything yet.
Okay. So are we allowed to do a vote with the three of us?
Yes, you're a quorum.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so... Okay, so here's the wording. Okay, so do I hear a motion on accepting the amendment or to adding section 1021 of our zoning ordinance that we follow the action for the wireless communication tower and facilities with PEG's comments added to that. Is that understandable?
Yeah, so I'll make a motion that we accept the amendment for the wireless communication towers and facilities. I don't have the number, including language on the net benefit to the community, which we can review later as the PC, before we pass it to the town council.
So I'll second that. Cookie?
Aye.
Okay. So aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Okay, so are we okay on that, Peg?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to the review of the RS2 map. RSTR mapping project with Michela.
I can bring up the spreadsheet again for if you want me to. I have just been plugging away on identifying which properties actually have a structure and trying to determine whether it's a primary or secondary or other. Not much more to show than last time, but if anyone would like to see the spreadsheet, I'm happy to pull it up again.
I think I don't really need to see it. I've looked at it several times. What anyone, Matt or Pete or Cookie, would you like to see it, or Marion?
I'm good. I looked at it. I was wondering, is there a way that I can print it out? Without going through about 50 pages of, and then you can't patch it together because, well, that was my fault. I did it front and back. But is there a way to get a copy of that that's easily readable?
Absolutely. I can, my plan is to put it on Dropbox and send you all a link within the next week. And I'm happy to print it out for you. If you want to meet me at the office, you can call me or email me anytime, and I'm happy to do it either way. If you want to print it at home, great. If you'd like me to do it for you, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you, Michela.
Absolutely.
Hey, Michela, would...
Michela, thank you for all your work, and what do you think your timeline is now, if you can call it?
Well, I'd hope to be further along with... the events of the town council the last few weeks, that was more my priority. So I'm hoping to at least have, Curtis and I have met twice and we're getting on it. I hope to be in a much better place by next month.
Okay.
Michelle.
I would just add to that, Matt, that Michelle and I talked again yesterday or today about it, and she's talking about going over to Bainbridge if she can pin down the treasurer, the assessor, because we need a tax roll that will show primary dwellings. She has a recorder's role, but it doesn't show this, but the assessor or the treasurer's role will show them. So if we can get that print out, then we can go through and say, because they keep track, like let's say you've got four parcels, well, they show which parcel is taxed as a primary residence, and that's an indication that you vote here, that you have a driver's license here, and that you have signed an affidavit with them that this is your primary residence, and you're entitled to the 40% decrease in the assessed value, thus 40% reduction in your taxes. So if we can get that, then we can start zipping through this thing by parcel number and really start pinning it down pretty accurately.
Great, thank you.
Colleen?
Thank you, Michaela. And then we'll go ahead and put that on our... Yo, go ahead, Peg. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if instead of Dropbox... Is it useful for me to upload that to the website? I must have lied earlier. Do not have that document on the website for this meeting. Would that make sense?
It could, yeah. I mean, it's all public record, so...
Is it multiple files or is it just the spreadsheet?
It's just the spreadsheet. There's four sheets in it.
Okay.
It's just an Excel spreadsheet. It's, yeah.
Let me upload... I mean, it may be a... dynamic document, but I can at least put up what you have right now.
Sure.
Okay. When you send me the Dropbox link, I will do that.
Okay. Or you can walk me through it. You and I can do it together.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Michaela. Okay. So we're going to move on to the next item, which I think everyone's waiting for. We're going to hear the Hoyt conceptual plan for subdivision and rezone. Curtis is going to give us just a couple of minutes on, he's going to tell us about the amendment for zoning and subdivision concept plan. So I'm going to give Curtis just a couple of minutes and then we will turn it over to Tom.
Okay, just very briefly to introduce it from a town point of view, and will have a great presentation for it, but basically there's two applications, like Randy's Act, one is for an application to rezone the 27 acres to high density residential. The other is a subdivision application concept plan, so it's just concept only, so it doesn't have to go deeply into the subdivision ordinance, but Tom can go as deeply into it as he wants. But basically, it involves the clustering, and it involves 13 lots, and then open space of about half of the 27-acre parcel. And so, from our point of view, what we're considering, everything is preliminary, and in search of feedback from the Planning Commission about how they feel about the presentation. So, because Tom and Caroline are not the owners of the property right now, they have the property under contract, and it's sophisticated enough so that depending on these proceedings, they can either buy the property or not buy the property. And it is within our ordinance that you're allowed to seek these approvals and get this feedback before, in order to make a decision about purchasing the property. So, with that.
Thank you, Curtis.
I have one question about that, Curtis. So the zoning application will eventually go through the process of a public hearing, voted in the PC, and does it go to the town council or is it decided in the PC?
No, it goes through the PC for a public hearing and it goes again through the town council because the rezone is an amendment to the zoning map, which is exactly the same as an amendment to the zoning ordinance. So it's the same process. So in this case, PC recommend, the TC is the land use authority, and they make the final decision. And that is the same process on the subdivision ordinance, actually.
Okay, Matt? Okay, all right, so go ahead, Tom. Are you there?
He's muted.
Unmuted.
Got it unmuted.
Okay.
Yeah, got it unmuted.
Okay.
All right. And I'm going to share screen here in a minute, but we're going to do a brief introduction, and then we'll do a share screen with the rest of it. Caroline?
Hi, I'm Caroline Hoyt, and Tom and I, we're together on this one. I know many of you, and we've had property in Boulder since 2004, but there are many more I have not met, and with 46 people or something on the list, I know there's a lot of you out there that are that I probably haven't met, but I thought it would be appropriate to introduce ourselves just for a moment. Tom and I are both trained as architects. We started a building company in Boulder, Colorado, back in 1966, and we have been in the community development business since then. We've always been interested in the place where development and the environment intersect. So for 50 years, we've tried to create contextually appropriate housing while protecting open space, and that's been our primary passion. When we first arrived here, we were able to purchase property down beyond the Graw on Deer Creek, and we developed a tent camp retreat down there. But over time, we got more and more enchanted with this amazing place, and we bought an adjacent parcel up on Black Mesa, where we built a permanent home, and that's currently our primary residence. As we've lived here, we have seen so many younger people try and stay in town and finally give up and leave because of the challenges that come from living in a place with limited private land surrounded by magnificent open space. We're interested in finding a way to keep those people here and not destroy the fabric or context of the community. Our plan for Bertrail Meadows is an attempt to accomplish that goal. Now, I will let you, Tom, talk.
And I just wanted, I appreciate how many people are actually participating. We've tried to really make this an open process, and looks like it is. I'm going to do a screen share here. And, well, first let me talk about there. As Curtis said, there's two parts to this application. The first part, the concept application, is really demonstrate how this plan complies with your subdivision and zoning ordinances. There are criteria-based decisions, planning, engineering, compliance issues like lot size, configuration, water, septic, fire safety. We've shown how the plan conceptually meets all the necessary criteria, and the detailed compliance with these standards would be part of a preliminary and final subdivision process if you guys give us some positive feedback that this is a proposal you think we ought to take forward. The second part of the proposal is the rezoning application. And this is really at the heart of the question before you tonight. The concept plan can only happen if the town, represented by you as the PC, believe the rezoning the high density and using the cluster concept is consistent with the goals outlined in the general plan. Our plan represents a significant departure from the types of subdivisions that you have worked on in the past. And your view on whether this concept addresses identified needs and is appropriate for this location will determine, as I said, whether we go forward with the plan. Yes, I'm going to jump into the screen share here. And can everybody see that?
Yes.
Make it
bigger.
I got to move it over so I can read it. All right. So that's visible, Peg. And
readable?
It's well, on the small side, but I can see it.
I'm going to start by just hitting some of the highlights of the intent statement, which is part of both of the applications, and it's the same basic statement in both of them. Now, what we're trying to do is subdivide, create a subdivision for 13 lots to provide smaller, more affordable lots in a location which is easily accessible to most employment and facilities, and in a location which is compatible with existing small lots in the town site area around it. The
The existing wetlands are an important natural feature of this project, and much of the plan concept is based on preserving the wetlands and the critical views. The proposal includes a pedestrian rink link through the adjacent Boulder Mountain Lodge property on the northwest boundary into the town pathway system. The proposal illustrates how the town's cluster ordinance can be used to achieve the goals of the general plan to preserve a part of the open field agricultural heritage of Boulder while allowing for opportunities for current and future residents to become homeowners in Boulder. The project is aimed at providing opportunity for relatively affordable purchases and intended to assist in the community goal of providing more affordable housing. We have had, in the process of working on this plan, and we've had discussions with several residents who are potential buyers in order to best inform the plan, and so that it really addresses the needs and abilities of the local residents we're targeting. If the Planning Commission gives us a positive response, it's our intention to involve as many potential local purchases as we can in the process of refining the plan. With that, we're really trying to talk about the plan itself. I think everybody knows where the location is, or you probably wouldn't be watching. it is Christina White's property here on the corner of Upper Lower Boulder Road. I've never been too sure what we really call that. Burr Trail, here's Highway 12, and here's the Black Ledge Road coming in. Incidentally, Christine White is on the line as well. She is the current owner who we have under contract with, and if the Planning Commission has questions of her about what her original intent was, she's happy to participate as well. This is actually the concept plan that we're proposing, and we really want to emphasize the concept plan nature. We've drawn in some of the adjacent lots so that you get a sense that it is compatible with lot sizes around it. There are two kind of primary, this is a very distinct wetland area on the north side of the property, and this is the irrigated field that you mostly see from the road. You really don't see this area when you drive by. It's a low spot between these, a knob that is here and one that's over here. The plan has 12 lots on a road coming in opposite Black Ledge Road. The 13th is the existing house that Carrie Venuti lives in. And we're showing a range of lot sizes from half an acre up to an acre and a half. Having this range of sizes really came out of discussions with the prospective residents that are here in Boulder. Clearly, there's quite a few different abilities to purchase and desire for how much land they would like to be able to maintain or want to be able to maintain. Some of the statistics, we're calling it 27 net acres. We think there's about 0.7 acres in the Burr Trail right away. It was part of the original property. And there's 10.7 acres the way we're proposing it involved in the actual lots, 15 acres in the open space, and 1.3 acres in the road. And the calculations in the zoning and subdivision ordinance are all off of net acreage. So they're calculated, when I give you the ratios, they're calculated off of the 27 acres less the road right away. This is just since this is off an acre value internet site that shows parcels and parcel sizes in the area. You can see where irrigated landscape is. You can kind of make out structures clearly on Hatch's property and Randy on yours. You can see a little bit of what's going on. Sam has quite a few structures up here, but it gives you a sense of the adjacent uses. We did a blow up of one of the middle sized lots here in order to show kind of how you could really use a site like this and still be able to build a house. We've really modeled it off of that really nice house that Peterson's have just done across the way, with a barn, potential chicken shed, septic system, and a really large garden, so that you get a sense these lots really are usable.
You could see them.
And especially most of
He's
the interest group is very strong.
I'm muted.
Gardening, so that's an important.
But they can see you on the screen now.
Can they see me?
Yeah.
We're proposing
this
using
is my,
building envelopes.
This is my camera right here.
Dotted lines here.
Just sit right here on the camera. Here's the camera.
Zoning setback requirements in order to
make building separations and make cars and the junk that always sort of accompanies these things limits it to a small area in the center, and then the open and the landscaping can be around the edges so that you don't have the house next door jammed right up against the wall, or worse yet, an outbuilding or a
secondary
building up against the outside. Property.
And some of that came from feedback from folks that are currently in the King Estates and gave us some of those things. Did want to show you, really, here's the use by right under the GMU, or at least it's you would have to go through a subdivision process, obviously, to get it, but this is what zoning density would allow on that site, is 5-acre lots. They would all require separate entrances off of the public roads. I believe that would be difficult to figure out how to utilize the irrigation properly in this kind of a scenario. And you would basically lose the open views that I think we're proposing. That's really just a survey turned the other way, so I don't think that's really relevant. I'm going to switch screens now, stop the share on this one, and if I can find it, go to the other one. Yeah.
Can you see this?
Can everybody see that one?
My phone.
No. Okay, I think we screwed it up here.
No, you might just need to select share screen again.
Oh, right.
Okay.
We need to find that again. It was down near the bottom.
Yeah.
There's the Shayla.
Okay. Our technical boss here. I think so. Oh, no, here it is.
Well, come on.
There we go. So I'm going to primarily focus on the general plan, because this is where you as a planning commission really have the discretion to decide whether this is an appropriate development or not. And I've just pulled appropriate sections straight out of the general plan and then tried to talk about how they apply to this development. The introduction to the plan talks about the plan being provided to establish a policy foundation and decision-making framework for the present and future needs of the town, and to proactively address present and anticipated growth and development of the town. The town adopted this plan as an advisory guide for land use decisions and further requires that all land use decisions be found to be consistent with provisions of the plan. So I think that clearly says you have a lot of discretion to decide whether this plan does meet the objectives of Boulder. It's different than the subdivision process that is criteria-based, where you're going, okay, did you provide the public road that's the right width? Are the lots consistent with the zone, et cetera, et cetera? The purpose of the plan, the general plan, is the basis for managing future development and growth based upon present and anticipated future needs. Again, that I think really gives you the latitude on this decision. The vision statement out of the plan, the primary objectives of the community are to preserve ranching, small-scale agriculture, protect open space, the secondary objectives of supporting an economically viable future by encouraging full-time residency and affordable opportunities for future generations. This is exactly where we're trying to go with this plan. Into the purpose section of the plan, it's designed to promote sound land use decisions throughout the community. The pattern of land uses, their location, mix and density is critical to any component. We believe the concept plan, these are my writings here in italic, we believe the concept plan honors the purpose objectives by preserving the agricultural character while meeting the identified needs for affordable opportunities for full-time residents. We've started a process to engage a group of people, as I have already mentioned. Then key land use issues is a big section of the general plan. Land use compatibility. The development of land use patterns reduces the potential for incompatible land use in the land use zone and adjacent to one another. The goals, objectives, and implementation strategies of the plan provide additional guidance for ensuring compatibility. The proposed plan with the surrounding land uses shown both on the vicinity map and the subdivision plan, which has adjacent lot sizes and uses, illustrates how this proposal is intended to be compatible with the uses. Both in the size of the lots proposed and the preservation of over half the site in agriculture. Preservation of natural environment and open space. The plan uses the town's cluster ordinance to allow the creation of smaller lots while preserving the most visible portions of the site. Irrigated agriculture with conservation easement, protecting open space. And the existing sensitive wetlands. Distinct community character recognizes there's a variety of residential densities and land uses within the town. The plan also recognizes that future residents will want to choose between distinctive residential densities for reasons of affordability and lifestyle. Excuse me. This plan aims to allow for growth and flexibility while retaining the character of the community. The intent of this plan is to keep the lots as affordable as possible while providing the full suite of town infrastructure. The lots are large enough that a purchaser can build what they want and still have plenty of land for gardens, landscapes, etc. And we already talked about the illustration of the lot itself. We intend to work with the potential purchasers to develop some of the basic building material covers to ensure the appearance of future homes fit with the Boulder town. This is a process, as you were talking earlier, Lee, about design process. We've already done a set of visual reference work, and it would be our intention to sit down with the group of potential purchasers and really go, okay, what do you feel you're willing to, you know, what works for you and what do we think is reasonably enforceable here that really is a fit. Both agricultural protection is one of the major objectives of the plan, and we believe the preserved agricultural open space will allow the continuation of the historical grazing or a more intensive ag use if that's desired in the future. The lots themselves are large enough to provide significant individual gardens, orchards, or other ag uses. We certainly intend to comply with the dark sky objectives that are clearly set out in the plan. Clustering development, perimeter development, and site-sensitive design, another one of the objectives written into the plan. The plan recognizes the need to prioritize clustering development that will reduce infrastructure and service costs, minimize visual impact of the development to the community, reduce the need for new roads and driveways, as well as access points onto existing roads, and most importantly, preserve productive or historically productive agricultural land. As much as possible, future development should avoid permanently altering productive or historic agricultural land. This option is intended to promote a pattern of development that is most likely to be consistent with the underlying community values and encourage, again, preservation of view sheds and open space. We think the proposal specifically meets the intents of this section by reducing infrastructure and service costs, using the one existing intersection to access the road, and it preserves a significant portion of the existing grazing use. Preservation of natural resources. This talks about using site-sensitive design. We have no real steep slope issues, and it's planned around the existing Boulder Irrigation Company open ditch running through the site. Serves as the irrigation source and also to sites downstream. The retention of open space and the pedestrian link in town park grounds provide a continuation of a strong community amenity. There are existing wetland areas on this site that we've tried to accommodate and design, and these will be mapped as part of the engineering survey process, assuming you give us a positive feedback to go ahead. The plan specifically mentions high-density residential, that it should be maintained at the present 1 acre minimum lot size. This application is requesting the rezoning of this parcel to high-density residential and applying the cluster ordinance, which allows the reduction of that 1 acre minimum up to 50%. Our actual average lot size in this proposal is 0.82 acres, which is an 18% reduction. And the condition for reducing the lot size in the clustering ordinance is providing that there's a minimum of 50% of the site permanently protected. We have 15 acres proposed, which is 58% of the net site. There's a section in the general plan on goals, policies, and programs. Identify housing sites needed for residential to meet the needs of Boulder residents while maintaining traditional town character and preserving the identity of Boulder as a family-oriented community. We believe the location of this proposal is ideal to achieve this goal. As mentioned in the intent section, we've started to engage existing members of the community who want to establish permanent homes here and have pledged to continue to work groups. Promote new housing opportunities to enhance the visual character of residential areas. The location, proposed lot size, and compatibility with surrounding uses speak to this goal. Provide a circulation system to provide people and goods safely, efficiently through the town and general planning area. We're using existing public streets and existing intersection locations. The pedestrian connection to the town park provides a link within the into the already established off-road paths within the town park, providing an access from the southeast for everyone in town that's not existed before. And then I stuck this one section in that's directly out of the cluster ordinance, which is part of the cluster subdivision. Because it talks about what the purpose of the clustering subdivision is. This provision is provided as an alternative subdivision layout option to encourage the preservation and protection of open space and scenic, historic, and sensitive lands located within the town. The subdivision layout option is designed to promote efficiencies in the delivery of required infrastructure, facilities, and services in subdivision design. The cluster subdivision also provides an opportunity to promote the desired goals and policies to enhance the community character of Boulder Town. Excuse me. We believe that that's what we're doing with this proposal. I wanted to go through some of the concerns that have been voiced and support letters that have been submitted since we've been involved in this process for about a month. I was going to go back to the plan. Let's see. I got to do the share screen again. There we go. And I'll just put the plan up while I was talking about this. We've gotten, I said, a number of letters and comments on the plan. The letters have been posted as part of the public record, and I promised Colleen we'd not read all the letters in the interest of leaving as much time for your discussion as possible, but here's a summary of what we've heard so far. We've received 18 letters to date, 16 in support, and 6 of those coming from existing residents who are seriously interested in the concept. I took one quote from a resident who's potentially interested in purchasing here, believing that it really represents what we're hoping to accomplish with this proposal. So I hope he doesn't mind I'm stealing his quote here. And I quote, "I suspect I speak for many who are invested in this neighborhood when I say emphatically, I'm not interested in changing this town. I do not want it to deplete its charm or resources. I do not want a proliferation of construction and a long slide into soullessness and impersonality. Rather, I wish for just the opposite, to caretake this place deeply and persistently, just as been done by those who were raised here or found it long before I did. I wish to stake some permanence in this place that already feels like forever. To do so, I require but a small piece of land that is affordable and full of potential. I believe the Trail Meadows would be such for me." Anyway, I think that really states why we're trying to do this project. We've heard several concerns, both by letter or verbally. Wetlands, asking us if we really understand the extent of the wetlands and how we will address them. The concept plan is doing that to the best of our ability by walking the land and really trying to understand it and locating the lots on the high parts of the site. But clearly that would be one of the first steps if we were to go forward, is to do the formal survey and mapping of the wetland. Preservation, the open space, several people have voiced concerns about how do you really preserve the open space in perpetuity. Curtis spoke to that in the memo I know he sent to the Planning Commission. And the clustering ordinance itself actually requires that the open space be put in a conservation easement that's approved by the city council. We have personally have a lot of experience with conservation easements. They are a significantly more enforceable way of preserving land than deed restrictions, in that what they do is actually deed the future development rights on the land to the holder, to the third party holder. The other concern we've heard from several people is that we're setting a zoning precedent, or some people have called it really setting a spot zoning precedent. And here's how I'd answer that. Any future project applying for a rezoning or an amendment process, as Curtis calls this, or like this rezoning process, you as the Planning Commission have the discretion, as we've just reviewed in the general plan, to decide if any project is in a location that is compatible with its surroundings and meets the vision defined in the general plan. Curtis, as I said, Curtis said in his memo to the plan that, you know, one of the really important parts of the process that would go forward here is that the plan and the subdivision process would be linked to the rezoning, so that you wouldn't be in a position where you rezoned a property and the plan didn't happen, and then all of a sudden you've got high density and no plan. So we understand that it's really clear to link those two, so that the plan you're evaluating is part of, is tied to the rezoning, and the rezoning does not happen if the plan doesn't pass. And the other question we've had is what can we do to ensure existing residents get the first opportunity to purchase here versus second home buyers? And I think we've already started a process where we're really trying to engage the local population that is interested. And we believe that we can actually, it sounds to us like, and the feedback we're getting is there are enough people that we really can meet that requirement. Josie, I wanted to speak just a minute to Josie. Sent a comment that I think you all got. Did you all receive that? Because she couldn't hear, and I thought she brought up a really good suggestion, which is actually one that we have already considered. So I wanted to talk to it a little bit. She's right in her comment that when we really get into the serious engineering mapping, it could change this concept plan to some extent. But the high-density residential zone, the real key to us wanting high-density versus medium density is that it's giving us a mix of lot sizes that we found in talking to people fits the existing residents' needs. I mean, there's a variety of needs we've heard, and we started out by making all the lots fairly uniform, and after really talking through the process, we've created a much bigger mix. And we actually, in our planning process, looked pretty hard at the medium density alternative, quite honestly thinking it'd be a lot easier for you to approve and be less objections. But it really doesn't achieve the affordability. And you a plan of this concept, pretty much their fixed development cost. We think we're in the neighborhood of $300,000 to do the roads, the water mains, the engineering, the wetland mapping, all the infrastructure that needs to go into this development. And if it was 9 lots instead of 13 lots, it is going to raise the price significantly on the lot. So we feel like the high density, even if we were to lose a lot or two in the process of doing the detail planning, is pretty critical to get the mix to meet the market. So I'm sorry to take so much time going blah, 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 but I hope that helps give you a concept, and I will turn it over to you guys. Do you want Peg and Michelle, should I leave this up, or what do we do here? Should I stop the screen share?
Why don't we leave this up for a minute? And if any of the planning commissioners have any comments right now, I would like to hear from the planning commissioners first. And to go from there. Thank you, Tom and Caroline, for that discussion.
Just really quick, I looked up, if Marianne, if you're on the phone, you press *6 to mute or unmute yourself, and if you press *9, it will raise your hand. So if you are indeed on the call, that's how you can communicate with us. Okay.
I'd like to comment, Colleen.
Go ahead, Cookie.
I'm a bit overwhelmed with all the thought that has gone into this. I too went through the general plan and highlighted all the things that I thought applied to this general clustering and the potential rezoning of this. And although, you know, I am no developer per se, just me looking at this plan, and I'm really excited by the thought that this could happen. And I just, the care for the wetlands, I know I read those same comments. It just seems like the irrigated open spaces are only going to improve. Right now, they have so much sedge or whatever you call that grass that is such poor pasture. It just seems like your idea about preserving open spaces. I love the trail to the town, how it incorporates this little neighborhood into the town park. I had one question. Lot number 12, does that lot, does the entry and exit go right on to Boulder Road? So that's the only, that one and then the main intersection of Meadow Road are the only two egress and that there are to that.
I can add to that a little bit. The reason that Lot 12 is fronting on that upper lower Boulder Road, whatever it is because there's a requirement in the subdivision ordinance that says that the frontage on the road has to be, 50% of the depth of the lot. If you come in, it would be so easy to build a little access driveway off of Meadow Road into that lot, and I would much prefer that. But we're trying to make it meet the ordinance going forward. If you say we can do it, baby, we'll do it. So there you go.
Thank you. That's the only question I have, and I'm really excited. I hope everything transpires and moves along, and I'm just anxious to hear more people comment on it. Thank you so much, Caroline and Tom. Now,
Matt, do you have anything? Are you there, Matt?
Oh. I am.
Okay.
Let's see. You've done your homework. I really appreciate that. I have, just out of duty as a PC person, there's some questions I want to ask, although you answered most of them. You've sort of preempted that, which is great. If I may ask, the whole basis of this is to make affordable housing. So, and I don't know if this is polite, but what is affordable housing when we run to numbers? What are we dealing with for that generally?
What we're hoping to get in the range, and I don't, this requires a whole lot of engineering before you actually know the costs
right.
to do the development. But target is between $40,000 and $120,000 for the lots or less. us. That's really where we're, what we've targeted.
Okay, thank you.
That's a pretty, yeah, I'd say it's probably more in the middle, but.
Yeah, and they're different lot sizes, I recognize, so there'll be some variance in that as well, right?
And that's, we've talked about perhaps maybe increasing couple of smaller lots just so that there are more at the bottom end of the price range, but that's the objective.
Gotcha, thank you. As far as let's see, so I know Curtis put it in the memo, but the concern about the in perpetuity, the conservation easement, the third party you were saying is the town itself, that would be the signer, is that how I understand it?
I think the ordinance allows for either, or speaks to either having the town or a third party agricultural land trust or something like that, an entity like that would hold it. The town has actually hasn't yet passed a resolution that would allow them to hold it. I believe the council's had that discussion to some extent, but to actually hold the easement, which we think because it's here, visible around the corner. But that is a question of who would actually hold it, would it have moved.
You broke up a little bit there, but so does that mean the commons, the owners of the individual properties, are holders of the conservation easement? I'm not understanding who holds it.
There's two different. Go ahead, Curtis.
There's a state statute that applies too that was revised in 2017, and I sent it along to you guys. So this is one of the main concerns in the letters that I read, those letters that express concerns. And I think that we'd probably look for a couple of two layers of protection. So there would be an association required, a homeowners association. It would consist of the 13 lots, and then those 13 lots would have common ownership of all of the open space, or what they call the statute, the common area. And so that's one layer of protection. Then you have the conservation easement, and conservation easements, as Tom pointed out, deed away the development rights, and they require what we call under state law a holder. And the ideal holder is the town, because now you have the political entity as the holder, and a town by statute is an authorized holder, along with land trust organizations like Nature Conservancy or the Virgin River Land Trust, to hold these easements. So by having the association, the homeowners association, literally own the property, every lot is a member of the homeowners association, they make decisions based upon that, and then you have the conservation easement going in, and it describes what the land can be used for and the agricultural uses, and it prohibits a whole bunch of other uses. It cannot be further development. And then the town, if they consent to do it, ideally would be the holder of that. So now you got all of the homeowners protecting the interest through their association and their ownership, and then you have the town also as the holder enforcing the conservation provisions, and you make the association document fit together with the conservation easement, so they're totally compatible and there's no conflict about how it can be used. And that is about as bomb-proof as it gets in terms of preserving something in perpetuity and having it adhere to the original vision.
Okay, thank you. And that process would be happening as part of the subdivision, so we'd be seeing it transparently that way, I'm sure, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then, so the other question that comes up is, it's great that you have, you know, that you're looking primarily at the local buyers and residents that are already here. And how can you keep ensuring that, or how, I hear your word on it for sure, and how does it stay that way in the future? Have you considered any of that? Is it possible to consider that?
I think it's pretty hard to legislate that. I think,
well, I'm not suggesting
you can do. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the simple answer to that is no. But the intent, again, as far as what we're really trying to do is create the lots that are the opportunity. And we'll do everything we can to make sure that the first round of this goes to local buyers. I think it's really hard to create a restriction that goes beyond that. Some of the potential buyers have actually asked us, who are very concerned about keeping housing affordable, about doing some kind of covenant in terms of restricting price increases and that kind of thing. My own view is I don't think that's probably very good for the people that are buying, and probably not the right answer in the long run.
Yeah.
I think what you do is try and figure an affordable piece and then hope relative to everything else it stays that way.
Then I suppose once the first round is done, a homeowners association can sort of dictate what they might want for the future or not.
Potentially, that is a possibility, yes.
Just a thought, yeah. Okay, and so a question about water shares. How do the water shares work on this? These people will be, you'll have it hooked up to city water, and do they also have irrigation shares?
The intent was to keep the irrigation shares on the irrigated land and not on the individual lots. However, I'm almost sure to do the irrigation properly in the future, we're going to have to put infrastructure in to distribute those irrigation water. It's quite possible we could create some access to that water as well. I really don't know the technical answer, but the basic plan is to preserve the irrigated water for the open ground and use the farmstead water for the lots.
Gotcha. Thank you. I think those are all the questions I have. I mean, when I look at it, I see an incredibly thorough job. I see, I doubt I'll ever see someone who's conformed to the general plan so much. So I like what I see. And, you know, so I'm giving you a positive response to this, and then, you know, with you on the journey to making sure all that is upheld and goes smoothly. So that's where I'm at. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do we have any comments from Marion?
Again, if you're on visiting through the phone, if you press *6, that will unmute you. And if you press *9, that will raise your hand and alert my attention. Marion, if you're there.
So I'll go ahead and make a couple of comments. Matt, you covered, your last questions were questions that I wanted to ask. So they were covered as far as who owned the open land. I was concerned about, I know that you can't guarantee that everybody in town who wants these lots would be able to afford them, get the loans and whatever for them. And so you can't really help with that process. But I do appreciate what you're trying to do as far as developing these lots so that it is easier for people to buy them at these prices. So, like I said, Matt covered a couple of my questions, too. I also, You know, I just feel like this is an interesting opportunity for us to talk about clustering. This is the first time that I've ever seen, besides when we did the Lee Nellis workshop, a clustering format, basically. And I also am pretty impressed with everything that's been done. I wanted to remark, too, basically, that we have received letters that are on the public record, and there are 18 of them. I think at this point, they're very positive. When we have our public meetings, there'll be a lot more public comment, I'm sure. And if more letters, I assume that we're going to have more letters coming in. And I just want everybody to be aware of the fact that these letters are have been all entered into the public, and you can get on the website and find all of these letters and see what people's concerns are and how they feel about it. So I think you mentioned, Tom, that they were right now, most of them, they're all positive. There was only a couple of them that had concerns. And that's really the only comment that I wanted to make about the letters, because we're going to be having public hearing meetings on this, and so we're going to get a lot more input, too. And I think unless we have any more comments from the Planning Commission, I think that's it for the conversation. Michela, Peg, do we have any more comments? Are we okay on that? We haven't heard from Miriam, right?
No, I don't. Okay. I'm not even positive she's on unless she is that 801 number.
Yeah, okay. So, let's see. So, what we're going to do is we'll go ahead and move on. Again, thank you so much, Caroline and Tom. I really appreciate all the work that you've put into this. And I'm really looking forward to see where this goes this fall. And again, thank you. So what we're going to do now is discuss the open upcoming business. And so I know that we're going to, let's see. We talked about having a meeting with Lee Nellis, but it would be within a couple of weeks. So that will we be putting him back on the for the meetings in September?
I suggest we put him back on for 6 o'clock in our September meeting.
Okay.
To further discuss what we've already started, and that okay. We choose like.
And then I know you'd like to stay away from Tuesday nights, Matt, and I have a commitment on Thursday the 27th. So I don't know if we want to. I missed that.
I can do the 25th Tuesday evening.
You could?
Yeah.
Okay. Sophie, what do you think about that?
I'm completely open. I have absolutely no plans.
Okay.
Our next meeting is the 10th of September. Is Matt, is that when you were wanting to do the initial 6 o'clock meeting with Lee?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
But we're also looking at having a meeting on the design part of that on Tuesday the 25th.
Tuesday the
25th. We agree.
Oh, you mean August.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, for the design.
Okay.
We're talking about the design information on the standards. So can we set that up maybe for right now? And Matt, do you like 6 or 7? Actually, it would be maybe if we could meet at 6, it might be better for Lee, or we can give him the option, or what do you think, Matt?
6 is fine.
6 is fine?
Okay.
Okay. So, Peg... So then we would have a meeting at 6 o'clock on Tuesday the 25th.
Okay.
Yeah?
I'll email him tomorrow morning and
see see if that works for him.
Yeah.
And then we'll also have our meeting start at 6 o'clock to have, that will be on the, to start that.
Got it.
And then we'll have the more information on the RSTR with Michela. And then are we going to, okay, so this is something, so do we want to put the Hoyt conceptual plan on for more discussion, or do we want to go ahead and, because I really want to have some public meetings too, so could, and when we have a public meeting, that doesn't mean that we have to vote on anything right afterward, right?
Right.
So could we have a public meeting next month to start discussing this?
Now, when you, I want to be sure what you're saying. Public meeting is what we're doing right now. Public hearing is what is the official thing that I have to have notice in the newspaper 10 days in advance, et cetera, et cetera.
And yeah, I'm at a public hearing.
Okay.
So we could start having public hearings because we can have more than one.
Certainly.
And we don't have to make final decisions after our public hearings either.
Right.
Colleen, let's ask Tom and Caroline. I don't, in my conversation with them earlier today, I don't believe they're going to be ready for the public hearing.
Okay.
Quickly. They've got a lot of engineering and a lot of other
things.
They needed this feedback. And so I think what we do is just wait until they're ready and then we start scheduling when they can take it to the next level.
Okay, so we...
If they're listening, they can chime in on that too.
Yeah, and so would you like to be at the meeting next month to pursue anything more? Or do you want to just let us know when you want to come back?
Colleen, our plan, I mean, what I'm hearing so far is positive feedback, which tells us that we would jump into the whole engineering process. We've allocated, I think the earliest we could get back to you is October. We've got about 2 months of engineering. So that's with a preliminary plan and the rezoning tied together. Preliminary, I don't know, Curtis, whether it's preliminary rezoning or it's just the first step of rezoning.
Well, it's however you want to go.
But
both require a public hearing, so I think you've got plenty of time to let us know where you're at in the process, and if you want to go forward with both and have public hearings at that time, you could have public hearings both on the rezoning application and on the subdivision application. Or you could kind of do them, you could stagger, break it up. But I think what you ought to do is proceed with your plan based on this input and then just get back to us within the next 30 days and we'll just talk about how you want to structure it.
Okay. Well, we're definitely going to tie them together because as I said earlier, I think it's you want to be sure you're in a position that you're not rezoning, that you know what you're rezoning. So the plan and the rezoning have to be tied together.
Okay, so we won't put that on our upcoming business. Cookie, did you have something you wanted to say?
No, did I raise my hand?
Oh, I'm not sure. Sometimes when I breathe wrong, it shows up. So.
I'm good.
So then, Peg, so we just have two items then for right now to put on our upcoming business for September 10th. Is that correct? Or do we just have one thing?
Well, no, the Lee Nellis meeting and then the Michela's mapping.
Right now we just have those two things.
Just those two things. Now, remember, I know that you want to talk about the design consideration. Wait, what is it? Specifically with Lee Nellis, it's related to design, but there's... The entire whole activity of, well, never mind. I mean, his suggested ordinance changes and the little things that would have to change in the general plan, you might want to consider talking about that as well because those are sort of over and beyond the checklists.
Yeah, that sounds good. Matt, what do you think about that? Yeah. Because there's a lot to look at. I feel like there was a lot of things I really wanted to get. Yeah. so let's go ahead and put that back on.
Agreed. Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead, Matt.
I agree.
Okay. So that, okay, so we'll put that on too.
Okay.
Okay, so is that, that's it then for the upcoming business? Okay, so we're going to open it up for public comment. I want to reiterate basically that this is a public comment time and we're going to do the best that we can to hear everybody's public comments tonight. I also want to you to understand, everyone who's kind of waiting, that we will be having public hearings on these, all of this that was discussed tonight, as we go farther on with this, and there will be lots of time for public comments. Anybody that writes letters to the Planning Commission from now until then, they will be submitted in the record as we are doing right now. And so I also would like to, I'm not saying that you cannot make comments, but we do have 18 comments here. I'm not going to name them off, but if you have made a written comment, if you would give someone else a chance to maybe pipe in tonight, I'm not saying that we're not going to take everybody's comments, but if you would give them a chance to voice their comments too, I would just like for you to maybe take that under consideration, and we will open it up for a public comment.
Before we start, I would like to ask whoever is on the phone number 801-842-5549. If you would please press *6 and try and unmute yourself so we can see if that's working and let us know who you are for the record. Maybe that would help us. Okay.
Okay, looks like Christina, maybe not. Go ahead, Michelle, I'll let you take care of that.
I don't have any virtual hands raised, and I'm trying to look at everybody. Raise your hand if you want to talk. Now's your chance.
Okay, it looks like...
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Christina.
Sorry, this is Christina White. I'm the landowner of this property, and I'll keep it brief because I know everyone had a long night. I just wanted to say that I have been thrilled working with Tom and Caroline on this property. When I purchased this land in 2012, this is exactly what I had in mind and was my goal and purpose of wanting to have some cluster housing that would be more affordable for permanent residents there. So I have been really pleased with working hand in hand with Tom and Caroline and think they've done a great job. I love that they've incorporated the historic rip guts in. I love that we can keep the existing house and the historical barn pretty much untouched since they're at the corner of Bird Trail and Lower Boulder Road. So I just wanted to say that this really makes me very happy if this can move forward. And this is something I would have liked to have done. But 2013 was I had a stroke and cancer came along, and I didn't get to fulfill this. So it's awesome that Tom and Caroline want to follow through with what I had in mind for this land. So I just wanted to throw.
Thank you for your comment.
Go ahead. Okay. Just a few comments and maybe a rhetorical questions more than anything. Seems a little difficult for us to be approaching this at this time when 2 to 3 years ago we told Ward Coombs no for the same idea of trying to rezone to less than 5 acres. So that seems like a pretty wholesale change we're talking about. I would like the Planning and Zoning Commission to consider that. I think that the cluster concept is interesting, but I think it's unlike the character of Boulder. I feel that traffic is something, an issue that is not being addressed, and yet it was quite a large concern when Ward Coombs was wanting to rezone his 6 acres by the school, and yet you're going to add 20 to 30 more cars coming down that lower Boulder Road, on how they enter their property. So I think the traffic is a problem past the school, past the LDS church. I think, and this has been addressed, and yet I think it's a larger problem than maybe we realize, is the future sale of lots, not just the initial sale. I think it's that secondary and tertiary sale where you're going to have, as a planning and zoning commission, you're going to have people coming to you asking for variances from everything from building envelopes, the size of lots, the size of buildings, height restrictions possibly, maybe not so much height. I don't know how you ensure the building envelopes unless that's by code or by HOA type of a provision, and maybe that is possible. I have concern that the lot prices seem, and Tom, bless your heart, it sounds very altruistic to me, because looking at the development costs and the possible purchase of the lands, I don't know how a lot could sell for under $100,000 there at a break even. Of course, now I don't know the purchase price of the land, but I'm making some assumption. So that, you know, 40 to 120 seems like that it's not feasible from an economic perspective unless it's altruistic. Water through Boulder Farmstead, you know, I have trouble with pressure at my house now, and I would be concerned that we've got, you know, 12 more hookups that will be coming. So those are my concerns and my comments, and I can get those in writing. I'd be glad to do it. And I appreciate the time that has been spent both by the Zoning Commission as well as Tom, Caroline, in preparing this. I can see that they have spent the effort to try and at least comply with a zoning change. It's the zoning change that worries me most, because I think that is the kind of camel's nose under the tent that makes it so every time somebody wants to develop, they're going to ask for another zoning change or variance. And I'll conclude my comments.
Can you hear me, Peg?
Yes.
So, Scott, I was on the Planning Commission when we did Ward Coombs, and at that point, are you talking about his lot behind the school?
Yeah, and he had 6 acres that he wanted to put multiple dwellings on.
He came to the Planning Commission, and correct me if I'm wrong, Peg, but he only asked us to divide those lots up into two lots, and I thought that we had done that. I don't remember any kind of subdivision or lots that he wanted to break up even smaller, and I may be wrong, but we did, I felt like what he had asked of us at that time.
You did. For the record, it was rezoned to medium density residential, divided into two lots.
Right.
Okay, so I don't mean to argue with you, but I just wanted to clarify that, Scott.
Yeah, and I'm not here to argue anything.
Yeah, no.
I think there was an original concept of putting multiple dwellings in a resort-type complex, somewhere between 6 and 13 small homes or small sites, if you
okay.
will. So that was that's the difference I'm talking about. Is
yeah.
Once he found that was not supported, then he realized he wasn't going to be able to cut that into smaller sizes.
Okay.
I'm kind of remembering 14 glamping units or something like that. It was quite
That's
a...
Correct. They were tent or camping units or glamp. You're right, Peg. But
yeah.
Anyway, thank you. And do we have any more public comments? I don't want to cut anybody out.
No.
Yes, but really quickly, Randy texted a question, and he's asking, he said that they submitted a wetlands map that showed all of the wetlands on that property, and he's just wanting to know that that was submitted. Did you receive that?
I have this map. I didn't get it until like 5 o'clock, and I told the person that gave me this map that I would make sure that all the planning commissioners got this map, and we can also make it a public record. This came from the Utah Geological Survey, and I will get this map out to the planning commissioners, and there it is. So
how big is that map, Colleen? Is that just 8.5 by 11, or is it bigger?
Yes. So I will get this to you, and we will make sure that is put in the record.
Okay, great.
Is Randy still there?
It looks like he's still on the call.
Okay, I see him, so hopefully he just heard that.
Okay, next is Blake. Go ahead, Blake.
Hi, everyone. Dave had to step out, but Dave and I want to say that we're very much in support of this proposal. I feel personally, I want to say, like, I live on a house that was grandfathered in as a 1-acre lot, and 1 acre is still really big, and it's a lot to take care of. And I think while the spirit of the 5-acre minimum was really good, the unintended consequences of a 5-acre minimum are that we have a lot of places around town that aren't irrigated, that have gone dry, that are even potentially fire hazards. I like very much the notion of clustered housing, and also to allow people to develop, you know, a home base here that aren't necessarily, forgive me, but people of wealth, or people who maybe inherited property or you know, people who are retired that aren't needing to make so much money anymore because they've already got their stake. I think it's really important that there be housing and opportunities for land owning for people who have young families or starting a family. And the 5-acre minimum, by the time you buy 5 acres, there's so much expense already invested that is very hard to build. I had a question for Tom and Carolyn, and maybe you said this, but I didn't hear it, but are you looking for traditional, like, mortgages, or are you doing owner carries kind of finance? Because I do know that it's, having bought my farm, I was able to do that because Alfred Jepson, also, rest in peace, Alfred, but he carried that note. And so it was very difficult to get a mortgage for raw land. And I'm wondering how you plan to address that for people who don't have family support or aren't able to get traditional kind of lending or have that money saved. So we can talk about that later. But basically, just as the closest business owners, I think, to this development, Dave and I wanted to register full-throated support. So I haven't had time to write a letter. I'm planning to write a letter. Things have been a little cuckoo. But it was really nice presentation and really great, thoughtful questions and comments from the Planning Commission. So thank you all. Good night.
Thank you, Blake and Dave.
Did you want to let Tom and Caroline address that, or shall we move on to the next comment?
Do we have more comments?
Debbie Stouts, next.
Okay. Do you want to address that, Tom? Or we can move on. It's strictly public comments. It's, you know.
Well, I'll just say that we've been talking about that. We do intend to provide some limited amount of financing for particularly couple of lots. We couldn't do it for everything, but it is part of what we're looking at, both with USDA programs, ourselves, and then another potential to do down payment assistance.
And can I? And so Dave Conine, he's the person right now that you go through as far as the USDA loans. Is that correct? And is he becoming involved in this?
Dave,
he's on here.
Well, he's on here somewhere.
Yeah, he's here.
Dave and I have talked about.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll just let him.
Well, I no longer work for USDA.
Oh, okay.
That was an appointment by the previous administration, and so I'm moved on.
Okay, misinformation. I'm sorry.
No problem. But the good news is that the Trump appointee that took my place is a very good guy to work with, and he's very committed to rural housing. I'm very familiar with the programs. The housing director that's there is a woman who was on my staff when I was the director, and I think we have a very good team in place there that is already aware of this possibility moving forward, and I know they will be supportive. Assuming that their budget hasn't been gutted, and so far it's good. So, thanks. I really think this is a great proposal, long overdue in Boulder, and I'm really impressed with the design, site planning quality, and so forth. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Debbie, you're next. Go ahead and unmute yourself, please.
Hey, this is Sam Stell.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm opposed to this completely. And the reason for it is, you know, you guys are sitting there saying that you want to preserve all this agricultural land and the scenery and the places that we look at. Well, we're going to be looking at 13 houses. And that's without a doubt. And not only that, I don't believe you put the delineation of that wetland. And when you do, you're going to find out, you know, they'll be able to build on a lot of that. And there's so many hoops you got to jump through. And for you to say that those lots will be cheap, the estimate I did on a cheap one was $240,000 by the time you put the infrastructure. And that's a conservative amount of money. And then the other thing I want to address is the impact of traffic on the road by my house. I've been trying to get them to straighten that intersection out up there by my house for several years. Well, we got Curtis Overhands leading him, his mesa up there, and he's got all these trucks from Jackson's hauling over 100 tons of, with the truck. Coming down that road in front of the school and a church. And there's no way those trucks are going to stop. And now you've made a huge impact on the traffic. As I recall, Matt Yosi made comments on in the Insider about the impact of traffic on the road in Lowerville. What do you think this is going to do to the road now? And not only that, Tom, I think when I first met you, you were wanting to preserve everything and all this stuff, but you haven't lived where I'm living, where you can see geese, blueberries, sandhill cranes, ducks, all kinds of wildlife in that area. You're going to destroy every bit of it, and you're not preserving the agricultural land of Boulder.
Okay, so, okay, thank you for your comment, Sam.
What?
Do we have anyone else? Oh, sorry.
I don't have, oh, we do. Deborah Oldham, go ahead and unmute yourself. You're next.
Yeah, I have a question. Okay, this is Alan Oldham. I have a question. How will the permit process be monitored? Specifically, Army Corps of Engineers in the state of Utah, Department of Environmental Quality. Will there be public access to that to see what happens there?
Do you want to answer that right now, Tom, or do you want to just?
Well, I really don't know the monitoring of our the compliance with it would certainly be part of the planning process, the engineering process, and the city zoning compliance is asking how we, you know, how we comply with those kind of things. The specifics of who we're dealing with on this particular one, I really don't know until we jump into the engineering side.
Thank you, Tom.
So, who's going to monitor the permitting process? Is anybody from the city of Boulder going to monitor the permitting process?
What permitting process are you speaking of?
Okay, so are you planning on going through the Army Corps of Engineers, and are you planning on making a SWIP plan?
This is Curtis, the zoning administrator.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Utah State statute, they don't have to go to the Army Corps of Engineers on this unless it's a pre-designated wetland on their maps. But there are town ordinances that will play into this and drainage and so on and so forth. That would go. So I think Tom's answer that until they get into the engineering, and we can look at the state statute and the town ordinances, not going to be able to answer your questions in detail just yet. But having said that, Tom can elaborate if he wants. And I'll post this.
No, I mean, I think that's the answer.
Okay, thank you for your questions.
I don't have any more virtual hand raises. If there's anybody that doesn't know how to do that, start your video, unmute yourself. Now's your chance. Raise your hand. Okay, maybe that's it.
Okay. So, do I have a motion to close the Planning Commission meeting?
I'll make a motion to close the Planning Commission meeting.
Cookie Schaus, I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Cookie Schaus, aye.
Thank you, everyone, for coming to the meeting and participating.
Hey, Peg, stay on for a minute, please.
Yeah.
And we can stop the recording, too.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for...